I'd like to take this time just to tell you to eat my ass.
We are back, Bulls. Oh, God, I'm so excited. I just can't hide it, Uncle Bill.
Get ready to shit your pints.
Week two of the Cruel Summer Slash back. Yeah, 2025. Yeah.
What's going on with you?
Buddy, not a whole hell of a lot. I've just been really excited to talk about these two films all day. I've been sitting here struggling to sit still.
Your ADHD's getting the best of you.
I'm like, oh! Titties. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting one, too, because this is a weird time period for slasher movies. It's the early 90s slashers is what we're looking at a couple of those today. So, you know, the late 80s, it's kind of like slasher burnout, right? And these are kind of a couple of the leftovers from that period. And you know, and like we said, from the upcoming weeks of this show that we're going to be doing, we're going to try to do little mini themes. I like that. I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, and this 90s period, though, was weird because, like, it's one of those periods where horror was in a transition and they're throwing shit at the wall like Fernando Valenzuela trying to find out if something's going to stick or not. And this was, I don't think either one of these movies really stuck, but
no. Unfortunately not, but
eventually they would get to Scream and that would be what would turn it all around.
Yeah. But yeah, again, Invisible Maniac from 1990, we're taking a look at, as well as 1991's Popcorn, which we did review that one before. That's one of the more well-known of the early 90s slasher movies. I would say it's got a kind of got a bigger fan base, I think, than a lot of these other movies that we'll be taking a look at on here. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to talk about that one. But
it's a movie that, like, still really gets forgotten. To me, like, you never really hear anybody reference that damn movie. I don't know if it's the time period it was in or if it's just the movie itself, but because it's a weird movie.
Right. So we do have some people in the chat here. We appreciate everybody tuning in live for these, but I know a lot of people like to listen to the archive versions, or we do have the podcast versions of all of these past shows up on the podcast feed on iTunes and Spotify. Unfortunately, Stitcher is no more. I miss Stitcher, man. What the hell?
That's what I always listen to all my podcasts and shit on, with Stitcher, so I don't know.
You can't anymore, though. Sons of bitches. But those check us out live. Antonis is in the house. What is going on, man? Vanderhoff. It is going to be a great matchup tonight. The blackest Peter the world has ever seen. We are ready for tequila and thumping thwit. Now, that's an old school reference right there.
Yeah, it is.
That's a Tlacopaki special.
I forgot that place existed.
Clayton. Dude, you want to know something funny? The P.O. Box that we have for Dead Pit, P.O. Box 1715, Prestonsburg, Kentucky, 41653, if anybody wants to send us anything. I'm just saying, I don't have enough stuff, so I need more. You can send us stuff. But occasionally, in that box, I'll get El Restaurante magazine. that's addressed to Tlacopaki in Prestonsburg, Kentucky.
Killer.
So we have what used to be Tlacopaki's P.O. Box.
That's awesome.
Anybody fluent in Spanish, what in the fuck does Tlacopaki mean? Like, sometimes I can figure out, like, what some of this stuff means just by, you know, from watching Lucha Libre back in the day.
Somebody put it in Google Translator and tell us what Tlacopaki
means. Like, El Azul is like the, what was it, the Go Big Blue or something like that?
Yeah, the Big Blue, I think. And then they got one down here that I can't even say. I'm not even going to say it, but it's
that's at one in Martin, yeah.
Yeah. It does, Black Bull, I'm pretty sure.
The Black Bull, so translate what that is, and we can't.
We're not allowed to say that in Eastern Kentucky, especially. I see. Azul means blue. Yeah. So what the hell does Tlacopaki mean?
What does black mean in Spanish?
You're going to get us thrown off YouTube.
Clayton is in the house. Witch Hunter, Justin Smith. He's not a fan of Invisible Maniac. He says it's painfully bad. I vote. Jack said he voted for titties.
I mean, that's what I voted for. That's the way to go, yeah.
Matthew Hara, he's really pushing for Cropsy. And you know what, Matthew? What I may do to feed your need is we did do a podcast years and years and years and years ago of Madman versus the Burning. We already did that.
Yeah.
And I may put that up as like an audio exclusive or something like that on YouTube.
This has just been an ongoing thing, though. And to be honest, like, I don't have any desire to watch The Burning again. Like, there's never a part of me that's like, I need to throw that movie on. Like, I throw a lot of stupid shit on, too, like, from the 80s and 90s. But I've never had the desire to go.
Sweet 16 was one that you recently. Yeah.
But, like, I know what I'm in for with that movie. Like, I know better than to go around that shit. It's like watching The Prowler or something. Like, you know you're not going to go back and get through The Prowler. Like, that's just not going to happen. You'll watch about 15 minutes of it. And then
The Prowler, on paper, The Prowler should be killer, but it's... The Mayor, what is going on? Motionless Zombie Sunday Night Pit. Yeah.
Oh.
Dalton, Matter Pat, SYC Jim is in the house. I think I can say that. I try to double check make sure it doesn't mean anything bad. Attention Fan, Robot House, lots of people excited about these two. Red, Satan Child, baby. Kevin Sullivan's in the house.
Because I'm a Satan child. Lord knows I'm a Satan child. Hogan come to. Speaking of which, is he in a coma?
No.
Let me tell you something.
I don't think that's accurate.
Let me tell you something, though. What's with all the fake-ass wrestling news lately? Just before we get this started.
What else is fake?
The shit about Flair shit.
That's not fake, no. I like
don't
to think
there's any confirmation of that.
I like to think that's accurate. It just makes me happy.
And then I saw something where Hogan's supposed to be in a coma. It's like, good Lord, man. Like, they're just making shit up, anything up now to get.
Right. That makes me happy, though, thinking that Flair shits himself. Like, it's just, I don't know. But we do have a poll going. If anybody wants to hop on that poll, we're going to start talking about these movies. And we'll go over it. I'm asking, which is the best of these two slasher films? Is it Invisible Maniac or Popcorn?
Yeah, you need to furiously pounce on that pole while you got the chance.
Yeah. Thrust it, if you will. So, we're going to get this party started, boys. We're going to go, and this is a first time watch for me, this movie. We're going to do chronologically. That's how we do it. Well, these movies were kind of back-to-back years, but this first one was 1990, Uncle Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Invisible Maniac, baby. And I want to preface this because a lot of people are shitting on this movie in the chat. I love movies like this. This is my kind of
See,
film.
I do too, and that's why when I saw people in the chat, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I don't know, but there's something that, to me, this is like the perfect type of B-movie film. Like, I don't know what you want if you don't like this movie. I really don't.
No, I'm confused too, because this is like, yeah, I mean, this is very similar to like movies like Blood Diner and Witch Trap. I'm a big fan of that one too. Just really goofy, like fun. It's not 80s, but it's close enough. Yeah. Slasher movies. But this one, credits directed by Riff Coogan, which is really Adam Rifkin. Was this his first feature-length movie?
I want to say that it was, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I know that there's so much funny shit about this movie that you would never in a million years think. But, yeah, I know Riff Coogan is Adam Rifkin. Adam Rifkin did, among other things, Riff Cooter. Did the
Riff Cooter.
Detroit Rock City, which is still to this day one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. That may be like his most mainstream movie, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of stuff, a lot of different stuff. So, yeah, I mean, this one starts off much like, you know, Blood Diner, like back in the 60s, right? And who would become the invisible maniac? Little nerd Kevin Dornwinkle.
Mm-hmm.
Is watching a neighbor undress using his telescope. So he's a nerd, so he has a telescope. And he gets caught by his mother, who is not very happy, is she, Uncle Bill?
No, she gives him like a 10-minute long fucking speech about how unhappy she is about it, too.
That's the wrong one. Here
we go. It's killer. But, yeah, and so the beginning 10 minutes of this movie is a strip tease, which is what comes right before that scene, too.
Yeah. So we fast forward. Dr. Dornwinkle is now a, this is what, 10 years later, they said, or something like that, or 15, 20 years later, whatever it is. He is a doctor who is inventing a special serum to make him invisible. See? And he's testing it out in front of a bunch of colleagues, and it does not work. And he's ridiculed by his colleagues. They're pointing and laughing at him, you know, like they did Carrie White back in the day. And he kind of goes nuts and kills everybody, right?
Yeah, he absolutely goes. There's four shower scenes in this movie, too, I counted, just for like, just so you know. Yeah, so he gets rid of everybody, and then he takes off and he becomes a teacher. And he works at this like high school, and he's still kind of sex crazed, so he becomes.
He picked the right school to go to. It's a summer school, I think, right, too?
Yeah, yeah. He becomes infatuated with all of the females, but in particular Savannah, the porn star that would become the porn star Savannah.
Vicky in this movie is her character's name.
And he is just like a peeping Tom, basically, throughout the whole thing. He just keeps looking in the showers and, you know, trying to see him. And so, essentially, the Invisible Man potion or, you know, injection that he's working on is just kind of a way for him to get to see high school women naked.
Right. And it works. I mean, it's what a perfect invention, right? And he picked the right school to go to. And what is it, like four or five different women that throughout pretty much the entire movie remain completely naked. So, if you're in it for the titties, like Jackson Jack said, this is definitely, the movie for that. Cause like you said, what, four different shower scenes?
Yeah. There's four separate shower scenes where everybody gets completely, I'm like, Jesus Christ, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, really a lot of the murders and the, you know, some of the goofy death sequences and stuff like that isn't towards, what, maybe the last 15 minutes of the movie. It's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek film throughout most of it. It is very well made. I think this was shot in 35 millimeter, too, oddly enough. So, very strange that they had that big of a budget for a movie like this. But, yeah, I don't think it did very well. It did come out in the box office. Is that correct?
Overseas, it came out in the box office. It didn't come out in the box. It came out in like Europe, but it didn't come out in like the U.S. or anything.
Okay. So, yeah, this is one of those movies, though, it's just overacting, kind of hilarious overacting. A lot of the actresses and everything that's in this movie. The only other one that I had heard of aside from Savannah was the girl that was from Melissa Moore, who's actually, I think she played Bunny. And she is from, is it Western Kentucky or something like that? She's from Kentucky, I know that.
Yeah, I looked it up and she is from Kentucky. And let me just say this, like, Savannah is insane in this movie, but that girl, like, I never seen anything like that. I think that's right up there with like Debbie Sue Voorhees territory.
Yeah, although these were like not natural. They were like, she didn't need a bra, I'll just say that. They were perky as fuck. Like, they were up in her face. Like, oh, look at here. Look at these.
So, yeah, that's true.
I wonder if she saved money over the years by not buying bras or anything.
I didn't even think about it, but I don't know. I do know that I think every single person in this film gets naked at some point in time in this movie.
Well, that's kind of the selling point of this movie. Like,
yeah, and if you listen to the commentary too, like, he's basically like, yeah, that was their whole thing. We were like, if we're going to do this, let's just go like all the way and like everybody, you know, like, every 15 minutes, there's a nude scene.
I have the lenticular cover. This Vinegar Syndrome put this out, so give them a shout out. And they did a lenticular version of this that's completely X-rated. But man, I don't really like this artwork very much. Especially since I saw the original artwork, which I really wish they would have went with that as like, because to me, that kind of gives you the idea of what kind of movie you've got with Invisible Maniac. So, but I mean, it's definitely,
well, here's the thing about it though. So it's really, really good, like, stupid, goofy kind of humor mixed with like tons of nudity, and everybody in it's insanely hot, and like stupid gags were like, people are basically like choking themselves, punching at the air. Like, you can, it's so low budget.
Yeah, the
like
fight sequences at the end with the,
yeah,
the professor.
So when people actually start getting killed, basically they're killing themselves. So there's like one scene where a guy shoves his own sandwich down his throat. There's a scene where like,
and like his neck expands with like, yeah, latex or whatever else.
There's a scene where a woman like drowns herself in a fish tank, but it's all like just them doing the stuff. Like, there's nobody there and there's not even any special effects or anything. It's just everything that's supposed to be like the Invisible Maniac is just,
I mean, they do have like some kind of post glowing effect that they do briefly or, yeah, whatever else, which I don't think they even needed that, but I did really, really enjoy this movie. Now, this was a first-time watch for me. I had heard about it years and years ago, but I don't know how easy it was to actually track down until Vinegar Syndrome had that. They released the 4K of it, oddly enough. I don't know if it needed 4K, but you know how Vinegar Syndrome does it.
It definitely didn't need 4K, but it did need a release. Man, I honestly really, really enjoyed this movie when I first watched it, for clear and obvious reasons, but also because, like, I mean, it's a fun movie. This is a movie you put on with, like, if you're drinking with a bunch of people and like you wanted to have like a fun time, you could 100% put this movie on. It's not a movie to be taken seriously. It's not a movie that's like, you know, has a statement or a political agenda or a socio-political commentary. It's just a bunch of tits and like some goofy death scenes and an invisible man. That's it.
Yeah. And but, I mean, it is. It's just fun. It's not meant to be taken seriously, tongue in cheek. And this time period, too, is perfectly fine for, you know, for supposedly they're still in high school girls to be, you know, showering naked together or whatever. That was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like today where you can't really get away with even one girl taking a shower naked, just piss people off. But back in the good old days when it was okay to group shower with big breasted nude women. One of them was involved in the porn industry. I think Savannah was actually involved. Her name on this was Shannon Wilsey, I think is her real name. And this is one of the very few like non-porno roles that she had. And I think that she does a fantastic job in this. Like, she's the standout, in my opinion, like, of playing just the ditzy, like, I mean, and that's her character, but that's probably, I mean, she probably wouldn't stretch it very much. But, you know, I think it's kind of sad considering what later happened to her, but she was already, at this point, she was already involved in, like, the adult entertainment industry, I think starting in the late 80s. I don't know if she had taken on that Savannah name yet or whatever, but she was already doing like X-rated stuff. And of course she would only live another like 3 or 4 years before she, you know, had an automobile accident that messed her face up. And then she was fucked up on drugs and everything and ended up just killing herself, I think, right? Shooting herself.
Oh no. Who froze up? I don't know what happened. It must be the connection.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, I just thought that's kind of sad because she did. I think she could have had a pretty decent film career in, like, horror movies and stuff at the very least.
Well, here's the funny thing about this movie, because Adam Rifkin was talking about her, and at the premiere of this movie, he said that she was really upset because when the audience was laughing at her scenes, she thought they were laughing at her. Instead of like laughing at the jokes and how stupid she's like portraying the character to be, she thought they were like laughing at her acting and everything. So she hated this movie and pretty much like didn't want anything to do with it. And I think she really had like a lot of, well, clearly she had a lot of, you know, internal problems and things like that. But I think she had a real thin skin about a lot of things too. And this just happened to be one of those things as well. I also really liked the lead in this, the Dornwinkel guy, Noel Peters or whatever his name is. Nobody knows what the hell happened to him either, as far as I can tell. Killer, buddy.
You do. Hell yeah, man. You're burning it up. Is Riz.
Golly. You go crazy on it.
That's the one comment we got from Kick. Would we be okay putting that on the screen?
What do you mean, would we be okay putting that on the screen? I guess. I mean, I wouldn't have done it, but we already did it.
People know what we're talking about, right? We are on Kick, at End of the Dead Pit on Kick, if anybody wants to.
What the
kick
fuck
into is, the future.
What the fuck is Kick?
It's some like new Twitch or YouTube or something, evidently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well.
I liked this movie awful lot though, man. I got it. Like, I was kind of surprised because instantly, like the beginning of it, it reminded me of Blood Diner for some reason. Like of like the scene back in the day with the two brothers or whatever. So,
yeah, it did me too. It's like that same style of comedy, like horror comedy. By the way, this movie was shot in a week. I thought that was killer too. They shot it in a week. I mean, hell, man, can you imagine like getting a budget and shooting a movie like this in a week? It's pretty fucking good for that.
Hell yeah, I think it is. I actually really enjoyed it quite a bit. Now, I don't know if it was, I mean, it's kind of a slasher movie too. Like this one's not, I don't know. I mean, there is slashing in it. I guess it is a slasher movie, but, yeah, I wouldn't be after watching, I wouldn't quickly classify it as that. Like it's more along the lines, like just a fun, like, I don't know.
It's like a movie. It's like a combination of a Russ Meyer movie and like a Universal Monster movie or something, like an old school, you know, like monster movie like that.
I think the lead guy in it that played the doctor, though, I think that was his only, like, he only had maybe one or two roles ever, and that was it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I was saying, nobody knows what happened to him. Like, he just kind of disappeared. Even the director don't know what the fuck happened to him. That's not his real name, I don't think, either. Like, that was just some name he used. Right. So nobody can really find the fucker or knows where he is. Not that anybody, you know, you don't get him for a convention or anything. Nobody knows who the hell he is, but still.
I don't know if they got Jason Voorhees' legs from Friday the 13th Part 2.
That's true. So, and that woman was actually on there, like, proud of that, too.
Anything could happen at the convention scene.
I'm wearing the same pants. Get you a picture.
Come on, take a picture of me from the waist down.
$60. Fuck you.
Yeah, Invisible Maniac, for those interested, though. Vinegar Syndrome. Well, I think their full site's going to be back up here in a couple of days. So they're the ones that offer it. I think that they did a great job with the release, too. Like, the transfer on it was fantastic. It looked really good and everything. So, I mean, I'll be honest there.
Listen, there's a couple of movies that have come along and surprised me in terms of just, like, I thought it would be god-awful, but this movie is god-awful in a great way. So I recommend it. I recommend the Vinegar Syndrome version, too.
Yeah, that's really good 4K. It is really. I mean, I don't know if it's one of those where you're like, oh, damn, that's killer. That's coming out in 4K. But it is actually, I mean, it is a pretty good 4K. No shit. So I want to look at the poll, man. And this is crazy to me.
Okay. But it is what it is. I think I know. Yeah.
We've got 59 votes, which there's like 100 people in here. So what in the fuck? What, like, come on, people. Invisible Maniac at 31%. Popcorn at 69%.
Man, people love that movie. I'm telling you, like, it's got like a cult following. Now, like it or not, it's just the case. Like, I mean, it does we'll have see. Its own.
We'll see. Everybody's got an opinion. It's like an asshole. Everybody's got one of them too. A lot of times, people's opinions stink.
So, before we get started on this movie, though, before we talk about the plot of Popcorn, which was made in 1991, and it's a movie that, like, I watched a lot when I was a kid. So this came out in 91. I would have been 11 or 12 years old, somewhere around in that. And I always just really, this movie freaked me out when I was a kid, but I always remembered it and always enjoyed it, like, later on. But I didn't know until later on that this movie was actually secretly produced by Bob Clark, the Bob Clark, like the Black Christmas Bob Clark. And the original script was written by Alan Ormsby, who was the guy that would work on like Death Dream and all those movies and stuff.
Worked with Bob Clark quite a bit.
He like got fired pretty much immediately into the movie.
Bowed out. Yeah.
Yeah. And took his name off of everything, so nobody ever references that, really.
The lead, Jill Schwellen, was not originally the lead either, so they had filmed a bunch of scenes with another actress, and I guess maybe that was part of the disagreement with the director, I don't know, and evidently went back and reshot stuff with Jill Schwellen as the lead. So this movie had a lot of issues behind the scenes before it even was finished and filmed and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an interesting movie. I think it's got a pretty good premise as well. But just, well, we'll get into it. We'll talk about it here in a second. You want to go over the plot?
Yeah, before we go into the plot, though, real quick, because I've always been curious about this. The Jill woman, is her name pronounced Schwellen or Schwellen? Because we've been calling her Schwellen for like 20 years.
Come on, Schwellen.
But I wonder if it's just Schwellen.
I should just send her a Facebook message and be like, how do you pronounce your last name? Maybe she'll actually respond then. I don't know.
But anyway, we could start with that, though. Her character, Sarah,
it's both, actually.
Yeah, it's having like a reoccurring dream where she's being like chased through this fire by this unknown assailant, this unknown person, and she wakes up basically every night and is having this dream. And so she kind of like jots down things that she can remember about it. And she ends up like asking her mom about it and things like that. Her mom's played by Dee Wallace. And throughout all this, she's also in this like theater group, I guess, part of a film department. Yeah. And they decide that they're going to put on like a horror movie marathon where they're going to show a bunch of old movies exactly the way that they were shown back in the day. So you've got three movies and they're like movies within this movie. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, but the movies are Mosquito, The Amazing Electrified Man, or something like that, and The Stench. And so this whole group, including like the film instructor and all of these film students, go to this theater and they start showing these movies. And then one by one, like this weird shit starts to happen and people start getting picked off. And it's a murder mystery kind of thing. You trying to figure out like who the actual killer is and what his motives are. And it's one of those rare movies that's a horror film that's set in a theater playing horror films. And I was thinking about this and I was like, what other movies are there like that? And it's like Demons is definitely one. Mm-hmm. And then maybe like,
Anguish.
Is Anguish one too? Yeah. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. And then Scream 2, the opening of Scream 2 has that in it. And maybe like Matinee by Joe Dante. But like, there's not a whole lot, but this is one of those movies. Mm-hmm. And it's got a pretty good cast too. Like late 80s, early 90s recognizable people.
Yeah, I was kind of distracted because the dude that played the teacher looks exactly like Mike Brady in the Brady Bunch. Like with his hair.
Think about it.
Like I was like especially the movie that they did. Who played him in the movie? Like he looks just like that.
Gary
guy.
Cole. Gary Cole.
He looks just like that fucking And the Toby, like they're all supposed to be college kids, is that right?
Yes, I think they're supposed to be in college.
Right. So he was 37 when this movie was made. The guy that played Toby. I don't know how old everybody else was, but I looked at him up and he was born like the early 50s. And I'm like, what the fuck? Really?
Yeah. But,
I always liked Jill Schoelen or whatever. Anything that she's in, she's not done a whole lot of stuff, really. I mean, around this time period, I guess she was at her peak, right? She did The Stepfather.
She did
When a Stranger Calls Back.
Yeah.
Wasn't that, what year was that? I don't even remember what year that was, but what else did she do? She did like around a short time period there. She did a few horror movies. Yeah, Cutting Class was one that she did with Brad. She dated Brad Pitt, I think, around that time period too, oddly enough.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that around the Cutting Class time period.
Yeah, so I always liked her. And I think that the plot of the movie was really good. But, like, the second half of it and the execution of it. There's certain characters in this movie that just completely disappear too. Like, who's the old man that had all the gimmicks for the theater, right? He's just in one scene. It's like a famous actor. He's been in a bunch of shit. And then, like, did he die off screen or did I miss it or what? Like, he was never, you never saw him again in this movie. But I guess they were setting up the theater like a lot of those old William Castle movies, or like that was what the,
I think that's exactly it. Yeah.
The Stench, and they had like Smell-O-Vision on there where they would release smells from the vents, and a giant mosquito was flying across. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. All of them had their own specific, which I thought was really neat callback to that time period. Yeah. Alan Ormsby is the guy that directed all those too. Which I actually think, and a lot of people think this too, that the movies within the movie are actually better than the movie itself. Like, the little mini movies that they put in this are, like, so accurate to the types of movies that would have come out that they're kind of mimicking,
mm-hmm.
that they're outstanding. They're to me, they're better than the movie as a whole. Although I think the most effective thing in this movie is the possessor film that's like out of something out of a fucking nightmare or something that you would have, where it's just like, you know, the reel of that film where it's like, oh, I am the possessor. And it just keeps showing the guy's head and then he's sideways and blood's shooting up out of his mouth.
Yeah.
That's what freaked me out when I was a kid. I was like, what the fuck?
Well, that's what I was saying. The setup for that, where they find, they're cleaning this old theater up and they find this, it looks like a small short film in 35 millimeter. And they just decide to quickly play it. And it's some sort of bizarre psychedelic thing. And it's supposedly this lost film called The Possessor from like 15 years earlier, where, you know, the director went crazy in the theater and burned the theater and killed people and all this, right? And that kind of sets everything up. And then, you know, there's someone in the movie theater that's taking people out. And he's also makeup effects guy, evidently, like he's creating busts and masks and all this, so he can assume the identity of whoever he wants to, you know, dress up as.
Yeah, there's that one scene that always, I don't know, cracked me up, where there's the guy with the, like the white wig on and he's taking a piss, and then he like comes in dressed exactly like him with his, what you would presume is like a mask that he made of him, and then he pisses all over him and just smiling.
It's right. Like, that was out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was killer. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that I kind of like. But ultimately, I will agree with you on one thing that we were talking about earlier, too. I do not think, I'll just say this, I do not think that the killer in this movie, when he's revealed, I like the look. I'll give that. I don't think he does a very good job. He's just way too over the top and way too fucking like hammy. And it's something weird about it. I don't know what it is, but that performance at the end is just, it's too much something.
Yeah. It's too over the top, and it's really just out of nowhere, because they're leading you down a path to think, hey, is this the director? Because they never did find his body. I can't remember what they said the dude's name was in this, but some filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
And also, we need to talk about the Maggie character, too, who's also having these dreams about a girl named Sarah, right? And that kind of comes into the story a little bit later as well. Dee Wallace is in this as her mother. That's another character very briefly in this movie. And she was doing those one day shoots or whatever, even way back then or whatever it was. This movie though, man, like, I don't know, like the second half of it, especially when the unveil with you see, okay, who it is or whatever, to me, it's kind of like, oh, okay. Right. I think
everything leading up to that is better than the ending, to be honest. All of the kills that happen with like the people, you know, using things from the movies and stuff, the little mini movies, I think all of that and the first half of the film is better than the ending to me. But that being said, like, there's so many little things in this movie though that I like. Number one, that opening song where they're all fixing up the theater has been stuck in my fucking head since I saw that movie, where it's like Saturday night at the movies.
It's a reggae song.
Picture we see. Yeah.
It makes no sense within the movie, but they shot the movie in Jamaica.
So that's why it's in there. They just hired like somebody wherever they were at, I'm sure, to do that.
There's a shot too where, speaking of Jamaican bands, where they have a power outage, right? And then they bring this band, the Wailers or whatever, whoever you want to call them, and they're playing electric guitar and bass guitar and they have a microphone and everything, and there's supposedly no power.
Right. Which, that's another, you just know that those people were just there and they were like, we need like something in the middle of this movie to happen. Like, I'll get them guys that were like playing around here or something. Because there's no other reason for that band to be in this movie.
Yeah. But that, the theater though, the, I think it's called the Dreamland Theater in the movie, is a real theater that is in, I can't remember what town they said it in, but it's in Jamaica. So I don't know if it's still there, but that was a legit movie theater. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely tell too. The interesting thing too about this movie is that this movie was kind of meta before meta became like the big thing. So we're talking about 1991. This was 5 years off before Scream. And it's like doing stuff like that, where it's like talking about all the movies and you as the audience, like, know what they're going for with the different movie kind of things and references and things like that, that they're doing throughout it. And the whole thing is really based on a movie. Like, the guy kills people using special effects to dress up. So
there is a movie called The Possessor now. There wasn't then. So that's kind of interesting. I wonder if he could have been maybe inspired by the name or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I just think that that's, I think that whole thing was an awesome idea, the whole cult or whatever fire thing and all that. But you know, the payoff of it is less than what the actual idea is.
It's just that, yeah, chaotic sort of like, yeah, this guy, I mean, the look of the killer, like you said, is kind of cool, but like, you're not really in, when you hear the backstory and the way it's explained and everything, you're like, man, they could have done something else, I think. But
yeah,
this,
and
there's no denying that this movie has a massive cult fan base. I remember years before Synapse even released the Blu-ray, like, I think it was one of those very early GoFundMe things, where fans were helping fund like the documentary and the eventual re-release of the movie and everything, because this was one of those films that had not had any special edition release on disc at all since, like, if it had a laser disc, but the VHS would have been the last official release. So it is good that it's available to watch. And this is the first time I've seen this in a long time, but I have never really been a big fan of this movie. And it's mainly just due to the, probably the last 25 minutes or so of the movie. I think the setup is perfect. I actually really like the name. I think that they could have marketed it way differently. This was, I do know this was a complete bomb when it came out. It didn't do anything.
It had a budget. It had a budget of $9 million and made $4.6 million. So it bombed pretty bad.
And, you know, it's just giving you an idea, though, around that time period, too. Like, people were just out of movies like this. This was out of fashion, man. People were just sick of them. Like, they had burned the slasher genre up. It was completely gone. Like, people didn't want to see movies like this anymore, unfortunately.
No. And this movie was kind of ahead of, I mean, it wasn't like your typical movie that would come out around that time anyway, really. It had so many different things going on, so many moving parts in it anyway, that they're not going to find an audience that year that we're going to get behind this movie. There's no way.
The trailer for this is fucking great too. And I remember the guy's name now, cause I looked it up. We were trying to think of Percy Rodriguez was the narrator guy. Yeah. And he is the one that does the voice in, the popcorn trailer, and it's great. It's awesome. So, the trailer's way better than an actual movie, unfortunately, but I didn't hate the movie, but it's just one of those where it's like, okay, they could have figured out something way, way, way better than what they ended up doing towards the end.
Yeah. But I mean, it did have one of my favorite taglines too, which I've always remembered since I was a kid, which was the buy a bag, go home in a box.
Go home in a box.
Yeah. And, you know, it's got some stuff that I still remember just vividly, like, even after, you know, how many other years that I haven't seen it. I think the last time I saw it was when the Synapse release came out, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they were onto something with this poster.
Yeah.
But I think that they could have done Bloody Popcorn or something like that. Like, I don't know.
So I'll give you a rundown, though, real quick of how, like, how many times it was released on physical media. It was initially released on VHS in 1991. And then Elite Entertainment released the DVD in 2001. That had to be Don May.
I don't remember a popcorn DVD. I mean, if they did release it, it must have been very, very limited.
And then the 2017 Blu-ray DVD combo from Synapse.
This right here is the alternate cover, and that's dog shit. Like, that's got Christian Jericho Elite.
That is awful.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way anybody's got that as, like, the cover of that.
So they were on something with the green color, I think. I mean, I'm definitely a fan of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think they could have marketed a little differently. The actress that Jill Schoelen, or Schoelen, however you pronounce it, replaced, and I thought this was interesting, is Amy O'Neill, who biggest claim to fame was playing Amy Zielinski in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movies, which just came out like a couple of years before Popcorn, the original one did. So that's kind of her claim to fame. So I wonder what, like, I would love to hear what the story is behind all that. Alan Ormsby, I think, is still alive. Be interesting.
You mean why she got
what all happened behind the scenes?
Whatever.
There. Yeah.
Seems like they talked about that in one of the featurettes or commentaries or something like that. I just can't fucking remember what it was now.
I think they may have a documentary on this. I might actually have to watch it.
But here's another interesting fact about that movie that's kind of connected to Bob Clark, too, which I didn't realize until I was looking into it today. The guy that directed this movie, his name is Mark Harrier, I think. He played Billy in the Porky's movie. And this was his only real movie as a director. I guess my best guess is he probably got, like, picked by Bob Clark to just, after all the shit with Alan Ormsby fell apart and all that, and just kind of.
Jackson Jack, it was Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, because I saw that in a movie theater. It was like their newborn baby. Didn't they have a newborn baby at the time or something like that? And it was like a giant baby.
I just love the thought of you, like, watching that in the movie theater. I don't know why.
Well, fuck, I would have been only 11 or something when it came
That's a killer, like, visual, though. Yeah, I did watch Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in the movie theater. I, like, vividly do remember that, too.
Honey, I Blew Up the Kid was one of those movies, though, that even as a young kid, I thought sucked. Like, I was like, they're just cashing in, right? They want to make another one. But, It is an interesting movie, though. Popcorn. It is very well made, very well shot. The reggae music gives it a little bit of a. I wish they would explain that, though. All they would have had to say is that this school is based in, like,
Jamaica
or something.
That'd be killer. Right? It's a film school in Jamaica with a bunch of American kids in it. Don't worry about it.
But they're whiz kids when it comes to filmmaking, right?
Yeah, they are. I tell you one thing not to do with this movie, though. Don't ever leave this movie on the Synapse version on the title screen, because it'll play that song on a continuous fucking loop and you'll never stop singing it. So don't leave
your Saturday night at the movies.
Do not leave it on.
Jamaican popcorn could have been the same. Put some pineapple barbecue sauce on it or whatever the hell they do over there. Yeah. What's a famous Jamaican food?
Jerk shit, like, aren't they famous for, like, jerk chicken and jerk Peters and I mean, that's what I think of when I think of
Jamaican. So
jerk,
like,
wieners.
Is there a big difference between Haiti and Jamaica? Is that different countries? I mean, like, different, like, is it?
No.
Are they far away from each other?
No, though? It's the same country. Don't worry about it.
Because I know Haiti, they make the weirdest fucking food. Like, they'll eat fish heads and fucking everything over there. I'm like, what the fuck? Look, I've been known to do some crazy things when I'm hungry, but fucking eating on a damn fish's head is one that I've never done. I don't think I'd ever do that.
You never gnawed on a fish head before?
No. I don't want the poor little fish staring at me right before I'm getting ready to eat him.
I don't eat.
Oh!
You dare. Jesus. So what is the poll at now, officially? Oh, God.
It was a big ass whooping, boys. Let's see.
I feel like it's going to be a even bigger ass.
I feel sorry because I actually, overall, I appreciated the titties in Invisible Maniac.
Yeah.
There were no titties in Popcorn. None. Nope. Right?
Nope, but not at all.
Anyway, 72 votes, which I don't know what the hell's wrong with 30 some odd more people that's in here that ain't voted, but Invisible Maniac is 28%. Popcorn is 72%. So a teetotal ass whipping this week on the Cruel Summer Slashback. What the hell?
I don't know. The Invisible Maniac deserves more respect than that, though.
You need to respect the Maniac's authority.
This was a good palate cleanser to me from watching those last two movies, just because those movies were so slow and kind of like odd and just, but these are very fast paced and 90s colorful kind of like movies as opposed to those two.
Did you notice that Kelly Jo Mintur was,
Popcorn.
I forgot about her being in it.
And Kelly Jo Mintur's in all kinds of shit. Apparently, like, you don't really think about her in a whole lot, but she was,
Yeah, this was the same year. Wasn't she in, is it Freddy's Dead that she was in?
Freddy's Dead. I think she was in, Part 5?
She in Part 5 or Freddy's Dead?
I think it was Part 5.
I forgot. Well, it was around the same time period, so. But yeah, this one, it definitely over the years gained a huge cult fan base on video. And I can understand why. It's just like I said, last 20, 25 minutes or so, it's like off the rails and it didn't end well in my opinion. But I do appreciate the fact that the homages to like William Castle gimmicks, like the Tangler, they have the little Tangler board where they're shocking people and they incorporate that into, you know, the movie itself and the movies that they're playing. So it's kind of, especially for the time period, kind of an ingenious idea.
Okay. So real quick though, I was looking at like Kelly Jo Mintur's filmography. It's insane how much shit she's been in that we actually know. Okay. I don't remember her in The Lost Boys at all, but she was apparently in The Lost Boys as Maria. Who the fuck was Maria?
I have no idea.
She was in Lost Boys.
Maybe she was like an extra clerk that was in a video store or something like that.
I had to be. She was in Summer School. She was in Nightmare on Elm Street 5. She was in House Party. She was in People Under the Stairs. She was in Popcorn. I mean, she had a hell of a list from the...
Girl had it going on.
Late 80s to the early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody in here knows what Kelly Jo Mintur was in Lost Boys either. We should ask Garrett. I bet he don't know either.
I have to go back and watch it. I don't remember it. Figure it out, yeah.
Unless she was like pretty much just an extra in it or something that they gave a name to.
I'm wondering if she was one of the people they killed or something in one of those scenes. Or I don't know. I can't think of
it. It wasn't the opening scene because that was not... That was a white girl. I'm about positive. It wasn't...
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But like, who the fuck? I have to really like look into this now.
It's only a mystery.
It's inside of you and me.
Yeah, so that wraps up week number two, boys. So and again, this is like our summer book club. So we'd like to give you guys a heads up on the movies that we're going to be taking a look at next week. Because it is another themed episode. And this one, Uncle Bill, is going to be rather interesting because we were talking about Spaniards a little bit earlier, and this is going to be a special double feature of South of the Border horror. Is that okay to say still?
Yeah, sure. We already said it, so.
Okay. So, we are taking a look at two. These are two that I've, neither one of these I've ever seen. So, this could be a total fucking flop or whatever. Let's talk about them, Uncle Bill. Let's showcase them.
So, number one is Edge of the Axe, and then Deadly Manor, which I think Arrow put out Deadly Manor recently, or more recently. I've seen Edge of the Axe, and that's going to be something.
Well, and they're both directed by the same guy, Jose Ramon Larraz. And I think they were back-to-back movies, like 87, 88, 89, something like this.
Yep.
So, that'll be next week. Spaniard Slashers. Slashers from the state of Spain, or the country of Spain.
Listen, I tried to talk you out of this, because I hate Spanish horror movies. I just really fucking do. They're always
well, they're in English. At least these are in English, though.
Yeah, but I just, they're just, I don't know what it was, but they're always super fucking cheap and just...
Arrow put both of these out, by the way.
Yeah.
This is just a clear example of two movies that I've had forever that I've never watched, and I'm finally going to crack them open. And they both kind of look, I don't know, is one a sequel to the other or what? Like, I don't know. But,
Nice.
Phantasm Matt doesn't know much about the movie, but he has an Edge of the Axe t-shirt.
Edge of the Axe would be an awesome song, too.
Edge of the Axe was one of those movies that the VHS, it probably still is, was going for a fucking ton of money, like a $1,000 VHS tape or something like that.
Oh, my Lord. If it was graded, though, it'd go for more. You got to have them graded.
Well, I'm gonna send in my Blu-rays and start getting them graded. That is pretty killer artwork there. I'll give them credit. I like that. Edge of the Axe!
Yes. Edward, I think that we can all agree that Pieces is a film that's a complete just anomaly unto itself. Like, he really can't classify that. I mean, it was directed by a Spanish guy, Juan Piquer Simon or whatever his name was. But, like, I don't think it represents the vast majority of Spanish horror films that I've seen. Most Spanish horror films and shit like that I've seen are them old fucking werewolf dumbass movies or just awful cheap.
I have Trapped Alive, but I don't think that we definitely haven't done a show on it. Did you have that one, Trapped Alive?
I don't think so. I try to avoid that shit like plague.
That's a slasher movie, though. Like, I don't think it's a Spaniard slasher. Jackson Jack likes posting pictures of people playing with the birds, too. But that is it. Did you see that?
No.
Jason's playing with his bird.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess that wraps up the episode, guys. We appreciate everybody watching. If you appreciate all of these videos, definitely like them and thumbs them up. And podcast versions will be available by the weekend. And all of the old episodes are still up if you want to waste a good, 10 hours, 12 hours worth of time. We can fill a whole day up pretty easily on just slasher movies. So,
yeah.
But yeah, Spaniard Slasher next week. What else we got going on, Uncle Bill?
Aliba!
Tito Santanta!
I honestly don't ever know what the hell we got going on. Like, I usually just have to, look or you tell me. So, I'm not sure.
Well, let's do the commentary for Greasy Strangler on Thursday, and that'll be what we do this week.
That should be a hell of a time. All right.
Yeah. So, our good friend Heather, the latest baller and shot caller, and I'm thinking it's the only baller and shot caller we've ever had that's a damn lady, baby. If he's a lady.
Yep, that's the first.
0.25 percentile. And she actually did join me on the MWO this week, too. So if you guys don't believe it, head on over there. and check that one out. And also, our Dad Pit is Watching episodes. If you ever wanted to hear us talk about 90s comedies, this is one of the only times we've ever done that. We did, what, three or four different 90s comedies that had come out recently in 4K.
It's kind of wild, though, going back and like talking about those movies and stuff. But, yeah, that's probably the most we'll ever do on 90s comedies, I'd say.
But we also did finally take a look at Michael Mann's The Keep. And that definitely got us motivated to do the Man to Man series, right, Uncle Bill?
Oh, yeah. I'm more motivated than ever to do that. I love that people come out of the woodwork to defend that fucking movie, too. I'm like, well, you can say whatever you want. You can, like, literally have any argument that you want to about that movie. But at the end of the day, it's a piece of shit. It always will be.
It's an insult to a piece of shit, actually.
Yeah. Like, there's no amount of director's cut that will ever.
I'm sad that they wasted Goro's time in that movie.
They did. They should have had Kitaro come in there. That would have been.
Yeah. But again, you can check out our. We did it for, what, about 20-minute review on that on the Dad Pit is Watching show. So, I guess that is it. Dude, I'm not sure. It was me that said that, and I truly believe that. The Keep, I think The Exorcist 2 is a better movie than The Keep. I legitimately do. Is it a good movie? No. But it entertained me in some spots. The Keep, I just wanted to turn it off the entire time. Like, I didn't get any, like, visually there was a couple of good shots there. That's about it. I didn't have any entertainment from The Keep.
So, see, at least in Exorcist 2, you had James Earl Jones flying around on a fucking locust or something. So, and you don't have that pleasure in The Keep. You just got Scott Glenn looking like a damn boglin.
And you got the line, I was possessed by a demon.
I'm better now.
I'm all right now.
It's okay. I feel a lot better.
Oh, but I shit you not, though. The Cape was the longest 97 minutes of my entire life. Like, that's the slowest, you know. I will say, though, like, I think Ali may be slightly worse just because it's like, I looked it up. Ali is 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
What if The Keep was like 3 hours long, like everybody always talks about?
Well, that's what he wanted. He wanted it 3.5 hours long, Michael Mann did.
It's only like, what, 85 minutes or something? And it feels like it goes on for 2 days.
97 minutes, I think.
Is it? I thought it was like in the 80-minute range.
I don't know.
But God. But
yeah. Yeah. But everybody have a good week. We will catch you guys next week for week number 3, Spaniard Slashers, over at
deadpit.com. Aliba!
I want all these people to click everything they're supposed to click.
You haven't been liking them, you haven't been subscribing to them, you haven't clicked the bell or notification or anything like that.
Folks, why don't you click the like button?
You hate us? Do you not want to see us succeed?
Why don't you click the heart button?
Is this something that you have against our particular show?
Why don't you subscribe?
You should click on one of them buttons right now if you want us to continue to breathe greatness into your life.
There's all kinds of wonderful shirts over at shop.deadpit.com. Simply the best horror shirts on TeePublic. There are others. But they all suck. You can get some Dead Pit Radio shirts. You can get Last South on the left. The Hills Have Eyes. Texas Chainsaw. Oh, wait, you can't say Texas Chainsaw. All kinds of shirts, folks. You're going to love them. Shop.deadpit.com.
Special thanks goes out to our supporters on Patreon. You know what kind of stuff you can get on Patreon, Uncle Bill, starting at only $1 a month?
What's that?
Access to every Dead Pit show since 2005. We got almost 200 fan commentaries that we've done over the decades.
Here's what other fucking Patreons do. They're like, hey, give us money, and then we'll let you see a video early that we're going to release like a fucking week from now, and then that's all we're going to give you. Meanwhile, we have a literal jukebox full of songs, thousands of reviews. I don't even know how many shows are up on there now that we've done over the years.
Hundreds of thousands.
You need to figure this out now and subscribe to us on Patreon and YouTube and Instagram. Help us to 1 million. The road to a million subscribers starts today.
So DadPit on Patreon.com. Join today. Tiers start at only $1, but I'd recommend at least the $10 tier.
You can do 50. The stock market's crashing around us, folks, but send us money.